Bruins. What a wrestling match in the slot. And here's Pastrnak up the right side into the right circle looking for 50. Walks in. He scores!
Marner. Center's shot there by Matthews was blocked. Nylander the rebound. Cross ice Matthews. Top of the circle to Riley. A shot. Rebound scores! JT! Johnny Toronto!
Miller to the point for Hughes. Shot tip. Stop. Rebound. They score. Pedersen jammed it in.
Back the other way. Here's Jack Hughes. DeBrincat gets on his horse. Gets back to defend. And Hughes ends up with it again. Moves it across. Here's Hamilton with a shot. Scores! Puts it over top of Ferguson. And the Devils retake the lead.
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It is 8:13 here on a Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. Some highlights from across the NHL, mostly last night. And, of course, the Sens from their 5-3 loss in New Jersey on Saturday. They're right back at it tonight. It's another Monday, which means it's the Sens game night. And it's a big one. Florida Panthers in town for a 7 o'clock faceoff. Gary Bettman is in town talking about the Sens sale and LeBreton and talking to the mayor. And he'll be on our TSN 1200 pregame show as well tonight. All right. It is 8:14. Jamie Baker will be part of the pre- and post-game show tonight, sitting in this morning as well for the vacationing Sean Simpson, as we welcome our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing very well, gentlemen. I'm going to have a lot harder time on the face-offs this morning than I normally do with Simmer. I'm aware of what's going on, and Simmer's, I can usually do about 9 different things on the face-offs with him, Jamie, and he hasn't figured any of it out, but I know I'm going to have a harder time today.
Is this entire, like, 15 minutes going to be about, you know, the role of the checking forward, how important the checking forward is and was in yesterday's game and is today's game?
If you look at the scoring records through that time, maybe not, Jamie.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. Hey, listen, when it comes to faceoffs, that's how I started getting ice time in the NHL. So they were important. I will say
it's
that.
It's the truth. And we used to scrimmage a lot. And in my early days, we were scrimmaging and they were dropping the pucks in practice. And I was facing off against Sittler and Bobby Clark. And it was like, I didn't win a draw for my first 3 months and said, okay, if I want the puck, then I have to win the draw. So you are so correct.
There you go. All right, let's talk about let's start with tonight's game. Jamie and I were talking in the first couple of hours. I mean, Brady Tkachuk's been in the NHL. This is now his 5th year, and Matthews finishing up his 7th year. And they played each other against each other a lot, Dave. But Matthew, for the most part, was in Calgary, and Brady, of course, was here in Ottawa. This is probably the first time in which they have played a truly meaningful game against each other with something on the line. How do you think it's going to play out tonight, just from a Tkachuk brother point of view?
I don't think it changes the way they play. I really don't. I don't think it changes their exchange of Christmas gifts. I think they're going to play exactly the same way they play, and it's going to be hard. And they're going to do whatever is in their power for their team to win. And that's the beauty of the way they play. And what Matthew has done this year in Florida is really remarkable. And if you look at this last stretch of games, and I was down there 10 days ago maybe, and if you look at their last stretch of games, a lot of them they were trailing in, and they've struggled in the last few, obviously, but they're trailing. And if you look at who leads the comeback every time, who has the assist, who has the goal, it's Matthew Tkachuk. And he is. I think he's played better than they could have possibly hoped for in that move to Florida. The rest of the team hasn't responded the way they were hoping, but he has. And what Brady does on an everyday basis, and maybe no more magnified than the start of Saturday night's game, and the way that he imposes himself on that hockey game and makes himself a factor. But I look back when we were talking about this and the potential of them getting back in this race, he looked at those two Florida games and said, well, if they get to where they have to go, you know, at some point that Florida was going to get going in the right direction. And they essentially have a 2-game series over the next handful of games with Florida, very similar to their back and back with Detroit. And that turned around the last month for me was that back-to-back to Detroit, they just manhandled Detroit. And Detroit coming in was playing very well. They'd actually inserted themselves, I think, at one point into the playoffs for a brief moment. And so they were playing great. They came in, and Ottawa played arguably its best 2 games of the year. That's what I'm looking for in these 2 games with Florida. And I always thought, okay, if you stay within 4 of Florida, then you've controlled Florida. And that's exactly what they've done with literally 9 games left in the season. And it's quite impressive from what they've battled back to, the fact that they're playing these games with 9 games left in the season.
Good stuff, Dave. Hey, I wanted to ask you, one of the narratives for the Sens, just kind of switching gears a little bit, and you talked about Brady imposing his will on games, but one of the narratives was the overall defense of this team. And Jake Sanderson's come in, and he's been phenomenal. I mean, I think he had high expectations, and he's probably exceeded those, how well he's played. Brännström has basically allotted himself now as a regular here, and then the addition of Chychrun. So knowing all that, the defense is a little better. Where do you see Tyler Cleveland? What have you heard? And would you insert him in the lineup down the stretch here for a few games?
I would insert him, and you know, I think he does get some playing time, and that may be an agreement that they have with him signing. We don't know that, but he's different. He, you know, and I have some pretty good contacts in the college game, and their read of Sanderson coming in was absolutely bang on. And you know, they compared him to the two guys that played 2 years of college hockey, and that was Hughes and McCarr. And then they said, but he could be better defensively earlier. And he is. But Cleveland's different in terms of a little bit more throwback, a little bit more Mark Methot, if I dare, in terms of more physical, steadier, you know. And it's interesting, Jimmy, when I look at Montreal, you know, they've brought as many as 5 defensemen into the lineup in the same night that were rookies this year. They're all different. They are all different. There are not 2 guys you say, well, that's exactly the same player. And I think you need that mix. And he'd be more on the physical side. He'll make the big hit. Now, there have been those that have compared him to Jacob Trouba. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. And I think Trouba's, you know, a little more of the last generation in terms of that. But in terms of what you get in this generation of a hitting defenseman, a big physical guy, he's the model. Now it's going to take him time to get up to speed, and we know, we understand that and respect that. But I think the fact that he's different, particularly from the left shot defenseman, particularly from Shabbat, Sanderson, and Chychrun, and of those three, I think Sanderson's already the most defensive of those three. He'd be a little bit more on the defensive side of Sanderson.
You coached 10 years at Notre Dame, so you know the transition it takes from college hockey to play in the National Hockey League. For a guy who plays a physical style like Cleveland does, does that necessarily translate easily to the National Hockey League, or will it be, more difficult?
Well, in many ways, it'll be more comfortable for him, I think, and because he'll have more willing bangers along the wall and in the corner, and he's going to run into a lot of big, strong guys. But it's not always the open ice. You know, when we talk about hitting, I talk about hitting in terms of stopping the cycle and just hitting and pinning. And not necessarily the big open ice, you know, center ice hit where somebody goes flying. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about puck separation and net front separation from the puck and able to control the front of the net. So I think in those regards, it's more of a contained quarter. It's interesting with guys that play a control game, they'll come in and from the American League to the National League, and they'll say in a lot of ways the National League is easier because there are more people in control. You have a clue of what people are doing, whereas in the American League, you know, there's a lot of different play that goes in a lot of different directions on a given night. Goalies will tell you the same thing, and because it's controlled and not as out of reach. And so I think, you know, the biggest thing is how many people he'll meet that are as strong as he is and the speed and timing of everything.
Switching gears, I want to, I'm really curious on your thoughts going from defense to centerman, because we all know how important centermen are. Of course. Well, it's the one player on the ice that supports the D in the defensive zone and the wingers in the
offensive
zone.
All right, Okay.
It is what it is. We are who we are. When you look at the Senators, again, this is more of a bigger picture question. They have such a bright future down the middle. Stützle, superstar. Norris, of course, he's been injured this year. Pinto, Ridley, Gregg, there's Kastelic. But because of the injuries, like they're one potential injury away, and the youth at center, do you think this is an area that they should look around at maybe bringing in a veteran center that can help out this lineup in the next couple of years?
If I've got Stützle, Norris, and Pinto healthy, then and I can put Pinto in the 3-hole, then it would only be as a 4th-line center. And if you're comfortable with the development of Kastelic, then I would say that you're going to be fine. But I think depth at the position would be fine. But it would be in more of the four hole if I've got those three centermen healthy. Now, the thing about Stützle as your number one center, his handles are so often that he's going to turn the puck over, as he did the other night a couple of times in the defensive zone. A couple of times he turned the puck over and you're like, oh, man. But he handles the puck so much. And if you think about where he turned the puck over, one was on the Mercer goal, and the other one was just down low. He's low. He's below the goal line on those plays. So he is supporting the defenseman and is helping out. And that's the important thing about it, is he's there, he's in position, and he wants to do the right thing. But I think if I've got those three guys healthy, Jamie, then I'm not looking for a top three-line guy, because I think they are centermen. I'm not interested in moving Pinto the wing. I think he's a centerman. I think he supports the puck well. And Norris is definitely a centerman. So I'm fine. If you're talking about a guy in the four hole, and Kastelec is pushing or on the wing some nights, then I'm fine with that.
And I thought both of the Stützle turnovers that eventually led to the goals, he just healed the passes, right?
It was
just
exactly. It wasn't trying to do something ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was a straight mishandle, particularly on the Mercer goal. You know, yeah. It was just a flat out fan, which is going to happen. That's a whole different topic about sticks and everything else, because I think a lot of guys get locked into the stick they love, but they can't change their stick. Like we used to alter the heel or the toe a little bit. They get used to one model and they stick with it far too long, but that's a different story for a different day. It's a good topic for a day with no games.
There you go. All right. Well, I'll scratch that down and bring it up another day. All right. We got a couple of minutes left here. I wanted to touch on another couple of topics. The Boston Bruins yesterday go down to Carolina, end up beating the Hurricanes in a shootout. This is right now the best two teams, not only in the Eastern Conference, but in the National Hockey League, and may very well be an Eastern Conference final preview. The Bruins chose to sit out Bergeron, Marchand, and Lindholm. Didn't even bring them on the trip. We're 3 weeks exactly away from the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. In terms of resting players in the Bruins, are home and cooled. We know that. Do you like starting to rest players this early? Like, what is the play for the Bruins specifically and Jim Montgomery with them really having nothing to play for at this stage?
I still think you've got to be selective. And I've been in the position of being asked if I wanted to rest. I personally didn't. I'd rather take a day off of practice than miss a game. But when you've got 119 points and there's still, you know, 18 points on the table, you have the prerogative to do whatever you choose to do. And to think they went down there and, by the way, won the hockey game on the road without those three guys, but in a back-to-back situation, you know, there's significant mileage on those guys. And, you know, they have that choice. They're that good. I was in there Thursday night. Man, are they good. And they've got an edge to them. And we talked about this a little bit on Friday, Jamie. They've got an arrogant/confident edge to them that is over the top. Like, you're not even supposed to hit them right now, according to them. And they are so on top of it. And if they did, and then that was the night that it was Pitlick who hit Bergeron. Well, they kept that in mind the entire game. Like, they ran him. They didn't just pay him back once. They paid him back 17 times. And it was like, you weren't going to do that to their captain. And they're just right on top of it. And against Carolina, against Tampa, they were the same way. Now, you know, it's interesting because Garnet Hathaway is not going to go up against heavyweights every night. He won't last doing it, but he's annoying and he's raspy and he gets involved and he's willing. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but man, are they good right now. They are just flat out good, and they can pretty much do what they want to do down the stretch here. They've earned that.
What did you think about the Boston-Tampa game on Saturday, which started with, and it looked like it was more of Tampa's choosing, that they wanted to, start with a physical presence, and there were a couple of fights right off the bat. Is that frustration from the Lightning based on the way they've been playing? Is this tone setting for a potential playoff spot, playoff series? What did you make of the way that game started in particular?
I actually thought it was more about them, no matter who they were playing that day. It just happened to be Boston. I really do. And, you know, they were playing one or the best team. But I think that was about their own game and not letting the other team dictate the tone of the game early. And the Colton thing is interesting because Colton's not a player that's going to get involved. But I think if you're Maroon, you're saying, okay, I want to grab Hathaway here. you've got to almost be a distraction and get something else going first, so the attention of the referees goes that way, and then I can get a hold of Hathaway and no one can get in there to break it up. So to me, there was a little gamesmanship and a little planning that went into that in terms of making sure you could isolate a player, because Hathaway had been a thorn in their side when he was in Washington, guys, and he had caused them some real aggravation. So I think there's a little carryover there with that specific player.
All right. Last one for you. You wrote an article yesterday in the Star in which you talked about the number of moves the Leafs had made at the deadline and leading up to the deadline. A lot of new faces for Sheldon Keefe to kind of incorporate into the lineup with, you know, not a huge number of games left. Can you kind of expand a bit upon what your story, was about and how you think this might play out in terms of that?
Well, I referenced Sheldon Keefe as a chemistry teacher, and I love that everyone uses the word chemistry in a positive light, like everything is smooth with chemistry. And I don't know about you two guys, but in my chemistry class, man, there were some things that didn't go that well. And
that was part of the fun, though.
Well, I didn't go to chemistry class, so I don't know.
But it's just a funny thought because you knew you had guys in your class say, what if I put that with that? What would happen? And, you know, when they had big goggles on and they were sitting with big gloves on at their desk, and chemistry doesn't always go well. And I was referencing, you know, just with the Leafs have tried so many different things, and particularly with the defense. And we've talked about this so much in Ottawa. I would be more prone to putting guys together and leaving them together and letting them develop a partnership. And in Toronto, that just hasn't happened. A lot of nights they've dressed seven defensemen. So let alone partners, they don't even know which side they're playing or where they're playing. And they've got the luxury of doing that, as Boston does, because they've racked up the points. But I think at some point it has to settle here. And six guys is a lot of new guys. And actually, if you count Joseph, what, seven, and if Matthew Nyson's in the University of Minnesota, it'll be eight. So there could be as many as eight guys on a 20-man roster that are different from what you had at the start of the year. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot on the ice. That's a lot off the ice. And so my gist of the article was just that, you know, in this chemistry class, the coach has to at some point settle into a lineup, I think, you know, with less than 10 games left in the year, and go in and say, okay, you know, these are the lines and you're going to be playing together. And I guess the best with Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares have switched around so much, I think they can do whatever they want with that. But it's not as easy for an Achari or a Lafferty or some of the guys they picked up to be as smooth as that. So that was the point of it, was that, you know, like, you know that Marchand and Bergeron are going to be together. And you know that Pastrnak and Krejci are going to be together. And you know where DeBrusque is going to be. And with the best teams, I think at some point it has to settle.
All right. Good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. I know you're on your way to Philly. You got a game, what, tomorrow night?
I do. Okay. I do. I've got Montreal and Philly tomorrow night. Montreal is playing well, and they're fun to watch. So
all right.
It'll be a good game.
Good stuff. We'll chat again on Wednesday. Thanks, appreciate the time this morning.
Have a great day, guys.
TSN 1200 presents Bet and Breakfast, powered by FanDuel. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook.
All right, welcome back, 840. All right, so we introduced something a week ago due to Simmer's struggles in producing winning picks to the point where he was so bad, people were disappointed that we took his picks off the segment because they were just betting against whatever he bet on, and they were making coin on that. But we're all about positivity and winning. So we turn things over to Hammer, who on Wednesday and Thursday produced unprecedented winning levels.
What'd I do?
To the point where on Friday, I think you started smelling yourself a little bit, as the saying goes.
Tad?
Getting a little too big for your britches, as the old schoolers would say. You went with the what'd you go with? The
four-way
parlay on Friday night of on March Madness.
Elite Eight action.
Yeah. Did you get one right?
Or did
you
not get one
you
right.
You went 0 for 4.
I went 0 for 4.
That's almost impossible. You could throw darts at a dartboard and do better than that. So you've now been removed because it's win to stay in now. And because we have a special guest co-host
today. Go Bakes.
Jamie Baker, sitting in for the vacationing Sean Simpson. He now gets to rule the roost, Bakes, with the FanDuel. So I'll walk you through it. Pretty simple. You feeling up to it? You're staring at me right now like in a bad way.
No, it's not in a bad way at all. I am inquisitive way.
Okay.
Because I'm wondering, well, let's just I want to hear what you say, because I'm wondering, do I want to say, if people are betting on my answers,
yes,
do I want to go down the simmer road to help these people out? Like, it doesn't, I don't feel pressure right now.
And you shouldn't. Yeah. No, just use your vast expertise within the NHL landscape to
produce. I
got to
hear the questions.
Here we go. So, it's Florida against Ottawa tonight here in Ottawa. We've talked about it throughout the morning. Okay, who's going to win the game tonight? Florida or Ottawa?
Ottawa.
Are they going to win by, they're getting a goal and a half. So you're doing well there. So you're, what are you predicting they're going to win by?
Well, the question is, are they going to get an empty netter or not? That's the question.
That's what I'm asking you to predict.
Yes, they are.
Okay. They're going to win by two or more. Okay. So there we go. We're good there. The over-under on this is a very healthy and very, very rarely seen on the FanDuel app. 7.5. Is this game going to go 8 goals or more, do you believe? Will this be a high-scoring game?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Moneybags Baker.
Wow.
+414 over.
That's high. 7.5 is a little high, higher than normal. That's a,
it's usually 6.5, and sometimes it's 6.
Well, been bet under, folks. Bet under. I gave you a great opportunity to bet under.
That same game parlay of sends on the money line and the over, pay $37.27 on a $10 bet. Okay, let's do one more. Who do you think is going to score a goal in tonight's game? Either team. Who are you feeling?
Good question. I'm going to go Batherson.
Batherson?
Yep.
Okay.
He's been playing well lately. I think he's going to score a goal.
From an offensive point of view, you still have some issues with his.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's not
talked
even
about it on the most recent post-game show.
Yep. He's not even listed here.
What do you mean?
What?
How can he not be listed? He's on the power play.
Oh, there he is right there. Never mind. +210 to score a goal tonight. There you go. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was easy. 21. That was harmless.
I know. I told you I'd walk you through it. Okay, if this doesn't come, and you're not here tomorrow, you're back on Wednesday. So you're not here tomorrow?
I won't feel the brunt of it, and I won't listen for that exact reason.
JR,
but I'm sure you'll bring it up on Wednesday no matter what.
You don't listen 5% of the time anyway.
Working from home tomorrow.
What does that mean? You can't have the radio? Is the radio broken?
Let's just see how the next hour and a half, an hour and 15 go.
Okay.
Isn't working from home mean like a 95%er? That should be.
That's different.
You're tuned in.
Depends on what I'm doing, on the level of focus for my job.
You wanted to touch upon with Dave Poulin, you played how many years in the NHL?
10 years pro, 7 in the NHL.
Okay. So in your 7 years in the NHL, the San Jose Sharks, like that was as they were just coming into their own, right?
Yeah. Like the first year I was in San Jose was
the third year of the franchise?
Third year. Right. And still to this day considered the greatest turnaround in NHL history because they were so bad the second year.
Right.
And then made the playoffs their third year.
And
I was looking. New Jersey's going to end up pretty close.
In terms of points, point difference?
Yeah.
New Jersey finished 10 points behind the Sens last year. And this year they're on pace for what?
They had 63 points last year.
They're at 100 right now. So they've got 9 games left. So the possible 118. They'll probably be at around 110 to 112.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So a 50-point
I think the Sharks were 56.
Right.
I think it was a 56-point difference.
And, of course, you paid it off in the playoffs with the big Game 7 winner. Right here to my right, folks, Mr. October.
Score one lucky goal at the right time, and you get yourself a 16-year broadcasting career.
Is the saying always goes, you know what? Jamie Baker, you'll never have to buy another beer in that town
no,
again.
No, that's not it at
no.
all. It's not a, yeah.
Didn't happen in San Jose for you?
That was Dwight Clark, Barry Bonds. Yeah. Joe Montana, Steve Young, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Jamie Baker, not really in that realm.
Not even once?
No.
Not even the neighborhood bar?
Well, maybe I've had the odd one person buy me a beer, but no.
That's disappointing to hear.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
It's Silicon Valley too, right? You gotta put everything in context.
No, that's true. That's a good point by you.
You
want to touch on what Dave Poulin had to say about the Leafs and about bringing new faces into the lineup, especially late in the season. As he called it, he says it's akin to a chemistry experiment. So what was your experience?
So, well, it's not. My experience is also just from trying to create a relatable situation where if I was in the room, So if I'm a depth play, if I was a third or fourth line forward and you're making all these moves, if I stay on the team, I'm now looking over my shoulder. So
because there's a bunch of extra guys.
You got some extra guys. And basically the GM has said, we didn't believe in the current group. That's the message. That's part of the message is like, we like this team for, as far as the regulation, you know, regular season goes. But as far as the playoffs, for us to, you know, make a run at it, we need to make, what, change a third of our roster from a skater's standpoint. That's what they've done. That's significant. That means one third of you aren't up to snuff come playoff time in our eyes.
That's the way you would feel. You individually, do you believe that would be how the locker room would feel?
I don't think every player would feel that way. Like if I was one of the top, like I'm not thinking Tavares and Marner. You know,
because we're always told that when teams like the Leafs bring in a bunch of players at the deadline, that's supposedly the general manager sending the message to his team is, I believe in you. That's what we're always told.
I think if you bring in a couple of players, you are told that we're going for it. You're not selling.
Yeah.
But I think if you make six changes, it's not necessarily talked about, but if I was, and the coach likes it, he can like it because it creates competition.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's also there's a chemistry issue, but there's also some players like, wow, they didn't totally believe in me as much as I thought they believed in me, but I guess they didn't believe in me as much as I thought. Now I'm going to have to go prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. So there's that part of it.
Isn't that good?
That's a good thing.
I like a motivated athlete.
But it's a lot of players to integrate into a roster. Like, two new players is one thing. Six new players is a whole different animal.
Right.
And there's a lot of shuffling. And up until now, I mean, I don't think there's a panic button. But at the same time, I don't think the Leafs have found that chemistry, as Dave was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the I think he specifically talked about the D pairings, right? Because that has been the one where they've gone with six and get some games. They've gone with seven in recent games. You know, Giordano, I think, sat out a game last week just to, you know, because he's older. They want to give them a rest or whatever. Like, they're mixing and matching all over the place in terms of their D pairing. So,
and I mean, they're also in a situation where they're sitting comfortably in the, you know, two spot in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
So it looks like home ice advantage against Tampa. And it's like not the easiest to get hyper motivated every single game when you're not fighting for anything, knowing that you're going to be fighting for your playoff lives in 2.5 weeks. Like, your eyes are on the prize, and the prize is the playoffs. It's not necessarily, you know, these lead up games to it, although they're important to get your game in order. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of a contradiction in that regard. And it'd be interesting to see how they play down the stretch, but it's definitely a lot easier to play to get up for a game. If you're like the Sens, Florida, Pittsburgh, the Islanders, those are easy to get up because you're fighting for your playoff lives.
Yeah. Did you, went back when you, so the first year you were in San Jose, you were still bad, right?
Nope. That was the year we turned it around.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Were you always, from that point forward, a playoff team or a playoff contending team?
I was there 3 years. We made the playoffs the first two, and then we significantly dropped my third year.
Okay.
Yeah, we weren't very good. They traded a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And they brought in kind of a plan in place. They had draft picks, young guys, you know, that they were going to bring in. Wanted to bring in, but the team was so bad, like especially the second year, that they brought in a bunch of veteran guys to just be average. Like, don't be embarrassing. Like, let's strive for...
Go out there, guys, and be average.
Yeah, well, they created a bit of a monster.
It's hardly win one for the Gipper.
Yeah, it wasn't win one for the Gipper.
No.
But it wasn't... Let's not go win 11 games.
Okay.
Like, let's not embarrass ourselves.
All right.
So let's put a better front out there. But at the same time, by bringing in Larionov, Makarov, Bob Airey, you know, I was there, Jeff Norton, Gaetan Duchesne. So you bring in a bunch of these veterans, and then Todd Ellick was added. You had Garpenlov. So you add, for some reason, it all came together. Mm-hmm. They brought in a new coach in Kevin Constantine, and we just, as the season got on, we started, I think, 0-8-1 that year. So talk about falling behind. We were playing for our playoff lives the whole year,
right?
But we really meshed in the second half of the year. So by the time we hit the playoffs, and I know we were number 8 seed, we were playing really good, disciplined hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And We won all the close games that year against Detroit in the playoffs. They won the blowouts in the seven-game series.
And then you played Toronto in the second round. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Lost to them in seven.
In seven. And I still remember Johan Garpenlöv hitting the post in game seven, right?
Yeah.
When the game was tied?
So do I.
I'm sure you remember it even more than I do.
Well, it was overtime game six.
Was that it? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically. I just remember there was a huge point where Johan Garpenlöv hit a post, and that kind of decided or could have decided the series.
Yeah, we lost. We were up 3-2. It was a 2-3-2 series.
Yeah.
So the first two games in Toronto, next three just for travel, which they changed after that year. Games 3, 4, 5 were in San Jose, then 6 and 7.
Right.
We were up 3-2 going into 6 and lost in overtime.
The reason I wanted to ask you about, was the team always competitive when you were there? So in that third year when the team stunk or wasn't very good, people always talk about at the end of the season, those types of teams are dangerous because, there's no pressure. Everybody's just out there, doing whatever. Was that your experience?
Well.
Or were you so bad that it didn't make a difference?
From my recollection, it was frustrating because we'd been in a playoff hunt the previous 2 years. So it was like you're playing out the stretch, and they traded off a bunch of guys. So they traded off Todd Ellick and Jeff Norton and Larry Onuf. So it was a depleted roster bringing in young guys. So it was kind of a tough situation.
Yeah.
Not a lot of symmetry, within the locker room at that time. Anyway, so it was a little bit of a little chaotic and wasn't great, but yeah, for some teams they also know like we're done in 2.5 weeks. So they're laying it out there. The mm-hmm. players still want to play well. And there's a lot of players that are, playing either for a contract or for a significant roster spot in the ensuing year. Like you want to leave with a good impression to the coaches and management.
We're talking mid-90s now. At that point, were there still bonuses, like based on individual statistics that you would be playing for
That was individual. Yeah, there were. Some guys had them.
Yeah.
I didn't have any. I wouldn't have made them anyway. So how many times can you somebody? How many times can you slash someone without getting caught?
What about having, what about a bonus for having a plus 50% face-off winning percentage?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey,
right.
You could have really cashed in on that one.
Yeah. Even that. Yeah. So,
okay. What about the discussion point of the Bruins sitting out three of their star players yesterday for that game against Carolina? The playoffs begin 3 weeks from today. Can there be a point of too soon in terms of resting guys? Like Dave Poulin made the point of he wanted to play. He'd rather take the odd practice off. That was the rest that he was looking for. What was your experience?
Well, I just think it was back-to-back games. So that's, they played an afternoon game. Then the next day it was going to be 5 o'clock in Carolina. So you're looking at back-to-back games. Now you're eliminating travel. And you're going to rest some players in a game, rest them in back-to-back games.
Yep.
I think you rest guys now, 2 weeks away.
And then
sure they're playing the last, 4 or 5 games. So everybody's, going. Because you don't want to sit out guys in the last week where they're getting a week off.
Mm-hmm.
That's too much, too many days between games. Because there's going to be a few days from the end of the season to when the playoffs start. So I think the timing of it was perfect in that regard. Now, if you're playing every other day, I would probably want these guys to be playing. That's what I do. But in back-to-backs with travel, I'm good with that. I think it was a good move.
Yeah. Well, and look, they go down to Carolina and, there's a pretty decent chance those two teams will be in the Eastern Conference Final, play against each other. And again, by the time they get to that, which is round three, this game will have been 2.5 months previous to that, but pretty good on the Bruins to go down to Carolina. And now Carolina had played the night before against Toronto as well, but sit out three of your best players and go in there and still win the game.
Just shows you the depth that they have. And those are obviously three huge players. They're the guys that kind of drive the energy of the team. Marchand, Bergeron, and,
Although the guy that wears 88 is pretty good too.
Yeah.
He had two goals. He got 51 now.
He's got 51. So he is good. But Bergeron's he's the guy, right?
If McDavid wasn't having a crazy good year, if he was having just a really good McDavid year, like let's say last year, do you think that potentially Pastrnak would be the Hart Trophy winner this year?
Yes. Matthew Tkachuk would be right there too. He'd be in the talking.
Can you win the Hart Trophy if your team doesn't make the playoffs, which is a real possibility for Florida?
I mean, because it's
How can you be most valuable to your team when your team doesn't even make the playoffs?
Absolutely. So if it's close between two guys, you got to be, you know, really, really significantly better mm-hmm. if you're going to get the Hart Trophy over somebody else. Like, it would be, I think it's a rare situation.
If Florida sneaks into eighth place, so just gets into the playoffs, that's enough to, I'm just
what are you trying? Where are we going here? What are you trying to get?
I'm just trying to figure out
Hammer,
where,
what's he doing?
Where your line is, that's all.
Trying to get you to agree with him.
No.
So, yes, he's
no,
trying to convince
you. No, I'm presenting questions.
Is he backing me into a, I feel like I'm getting back into a corner.
Bit.
A little, that's all.
And you're doing a great job of bobbing and weaving right now.
Okay.
It's like rope-a-dope. I'm just asking. So what is the difference? Okay, so Matthew Tkachuk, let's say it's a normal McDavid year and he's not the runaway unanimous Hart Trophy winner. Okay? Matthew Tkachuk is on the Florida Panthers and having the year he's having, that everybody agrees is having a fantastic year. The team finishes ninth, finishes out of the playoffs by 1 point. Okay? Why is it any different in whether he should get a Hart Trophy vote of whether they finish in ninth place by 1 point or whether they finish in eighth place? By 1 point.
Because they didn't make the playoffs.
He did what he could to put the team, like, that's not on him. That's on the team.
Like I said, they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, I don't know how else you want me to say it. I'm not going to spin it any other way. If it's between he and Pastrnak,
yeah.
I mean, you look at the point differential. Tkachuk is like, talk about leading the way for that team.
Yeah.
Pastrnak's got a lot of help, both in nets,
for sure, yeah.
Defense, forwards, everything. You know, as great of a year as he's having, that is a full team effort.
Mm-hmm.
Where Tkachuk is like by far and away, he's pulling this team along with him,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I think there's something to be said. You said it. Like, even if you're 1 point out, I think it's a different. We're talking about different animals because you didn't make the playoffs. You got to find a way to make it. You're pulling. That's really pulling your team to another level.
The I don't know what the right word is. The slogan for the Hart Trophy is the player who is deemed to be most valuable to his team. So you're saying if a player doesn't lead his team to a playoff spot, his contribution was of
you're
no,
trying to back me into a corner.
No value.
You're talking red apple, green apple. That's what you're like. This is not apples and oranges. They're two nice, fresh, tasty apples.
Yes.
That's what you're asking.
One's a delicious, one's a Spartan.
And all I'm saying, one guy's like, it's hard to, and I like red apples and I like green apples.
Yeah.
And how do I differentiate between the two? Pastrnak has 51 goals. That's mm-hmm. awesome. He's having an unbelievable year. What Matthew Tkachuk is doing, he's having an unbelievable year. So how do I compare the two?
I can't believe right now you're trying to rationalize the fact that Connor McDavid isn't the unanimous choice.
No, he is. You're saying if he didn't,
are
wasn't
you?
Part of the voting.
Are you?
It's Connor McDavid by 100 miles. That's not backing me into a corner.
Good
that's
try.
Just being
no.
that's being ridiculous.
Again, welcome to the show, Bakes.
It is what it is.
You listen 95% of the time.
You missed the part where I try and back you into a corner.
Well, you don't know.
Okay.
You don't know it until you feel it, right? Like, you don't know. Like, I don't know what it's like to be in here getting backed into a corner by you.
Okay.
Now I
Listener
now I know.
Brings up a good question. Erik Karlsson. The San Jose Sharks could finish dead last in the National Hockey League this year. I think they're tied with Columbus, are they not, for dead last?
Yep. They
could get the first pick in the draft. Should Erik Karlsson win the Norris Trophy?
He gets 100 points, yeah. Don't ask me if he gets 98.
So, okay.
Because that's what you're going to do.
But what's the difference?
2 points.
No. What's the difference in him being able to having, you know, you just said that Matthew Tkachuk couldn't
win
the Hart
Trophy.
You're
the best defenseman. One is an MVP. It's supposed to be a team-oriented, an individual trophy that's focused on helping your team. The other one is an individual award, like the best defenseman in the who's the best defenseman in the league this year?
Right.
To me, it's Erik Karlsson. Doesn't have to do with how the team is doing.
Right.
But I know where you're going, and it's a valid point. It's mm-hmm. good.
Okay. No, by the way,
good stuff.
Everything,
keep on trucking.
No, everything you've said, I agree with. I'm just
well,
trying
it
to
doesn't,
get you to say
it sure doesn't sound like it, but anyway. That's reassuring.
All right. We're going to take a break, get a top of the hour news and sports update, reconvene hour four. Can you believe you've been here for 3 hours already?
It just flies by when you're
thinking about having fun.
trying to get showing up early, so early, but that's
no,
okay.
No, it's okay.
No, it's good. What it's all in good fun. Don't get defensive.
I'm just testing you. Testing your limits.
Look at my shoulders. See how downsloping they are? You know why they're like that? I'm like a chameleon. I've had so much crap over the years. It falls out of my ear, and it used to just sit on my shoulder and it smelled. Now it just rolls off. It's like nothing.
It looks like a duck's back. Your shoulder looks like a duck's back. Rolls right off.
Exactly.
This is a good time to use one of JR's sayings, Bakes, which you came close to using moments ago, where you don't know until you know.
Yeah.
And now this morning, you know.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know before.
I didn't know.
You'll never be able to listen to the show again when you're not on it, now knowing what it's like behind the curtain.
Yep. 100%.
Now, if you only listen to 100% of the time instead of 95% of the time.
If I listen to 100% of the time, then the bar is set so high. Like, you don't have to strive to be better anymore. Well, what good is that going to do?
He has summited mountain mornings. There you go. All right, we'll take a break. Top of the hour update. Hour 4 will include another code word. We're going to get that all straightened out for you. It's all fixed up? Okay. All right, so the code word thing is all fixed up. But we'll announce our last winner of the Jake Sanderson jersey from last week, so we'll have that for you. And we'll play Sense or Sensibility as well. We'll have some fun. And up for grabs, tickets for Saturday night, Leafs and Sens, 100-level seats. We'll do that coming up before 10. That's when we're going to send you to Canadian Tire Center. Big game tonight. It is the Sens and the Florida Panthers. Tkachuk brothers. First real meaningful game where they'll go head-to-head. That'll happen tonight at 7. And right here on TSN 1200.